This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Sean Rocco makes his living telling stories for the NNO newspaper. He's a photojournalist, and he considers himself an artist who loves to create a narrative with pictures. But in the mid-1990s, his job changed. Video was added to his duties, and he often found himself on deadline, tangled in wire, with two different mediums demanding his attention. The pictures and the videos were less than satisfying, and as an artist, he felt somewhat empty. Enter a flip phone, circa 1996. The camera embedded in that phone turned out to be Sean's saving grace. He used that camera to exercise his artistic muscle. Thousands of images later, an exhibition of Sean's cell phone photography is on view at the gallery space at the museum store at the Ackland Art Museum in Chapel Hill. Sean Rocco joins me now in the studio. Welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
So describe this moment when the flip phone becomes this artistic representation.
Sure. And just one clarification. It was about 2006. 2006 flip phone. I don't think 96. We were still having those bricks of phones.
When we wrote this, they were actually looking at my flip phone. And I think that's why they thought it must be 96.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So it was 2006. And like you're saying, it was a frustration because we So journalism, the profession, was moving towards video, and we found this nice new hammer, and everything was a nail all of a sudden, and which I appreciate video. I appreciate audio. A lot of times I'm on assignments, and I would really love to record audio of the people I'm photographing because of just their voices. But so at the time, we were doing a lot of video, and it was starting to get really muddied and muddled. And caught up in wires, and I was kind of missing the reason I got into photography, the creation of photography and the telling of stories. And I was on an assignment one day and I was really frustrated. I was missing a lot of moments. I was missing a lot of audio moments, visual moments. And I stole myself away into a room in the back. And there just happened to be, it sounds crazy, it was just a lamp on a table with some light streaming through the window. And it's a very red room. And it was a nice still life, and took out my quote-unquote professional camera, my Nikon at the time, took a picture, looked at it, didn't give it a second thought, and flipped out the cell phone. I think I was making a phone call or checking my voicemail or something, and I decided just randomly to kind of take a photo. And I looked at it, I'm like, huh, there's something here. So I went back, when I got back to the office, I looked at it on the computer screen. And it had a feeling and an atmosphere to it that, you know, the professional camera didn't. And I responded to that. So that kind of opened up some ideas like, okay, where do we go from here? What else can I do with this? And that's kind of where it started, just something really simple. And I don't have that printed, and I only show it in some slideshows every now and then, but it's something very simple. That's what started me towards this.
It seems to me, though, that you told me two stories. One of them is the speed up in journalism. Let's get our journalists to do everything that three people should be doing. And so part of that is your head is split because really there needed to be three people, not one person,
right?
Which is not to say the technology would have been bad. If there had been a videographer, maybe their eyes could be opened and their moment could be captured. But there's something you said about the technology. The picture, you said, looked better somehow.
So it didn't look better technically. It felt better. It felt different. And I think most people will understand. I kind of relate it to a Polaroid. I think we all know with Polaroids, you're going to get an acceptable image, but because of the chemistry involved, when you peel back, you know, that film, there's something in there that is part of the process that adds to the content that you just shot. And, you know, there's inherent imperfections in it that make it feel a little more real. And so I think that's kind of what, you know, the cell phone did. Now, I tried other cell phones, my wife's cell phone, some friends. And the thing was, they didn't give me I didn't get the same reaction because they were either, their quality was way off the charts, not good, or it was too good. So, you know, when I started this, it wasn't because it was a cell phone. It just happened to be a camera that produced an image that resonated with me. So,
well, what does it say about you as an artist and all the kind of great gizmology that goes around high tech, you know? And it's not just the technology, because in both cases you're using digital technology. It's
right.
the optics that were different, right? I mean, it's the lenses and stuff.
Yeah, the optics. I mean, I think it's probably just a little plastic lens on that camera. I honestly tell people I think it was broken in a good way. You know, I think I lucked out. I was fortunate to have a phone camera that, you know, was broken in a good way, and that gave me a result that I liked.
Well, as somebody who's a trained photographer whose eye is trained and who knows how to use the stuff, did you have to relearn when you went on this journey now to make cell phone photography? Do you have to teach yourself how to use it? Are there different techniques?
Not really teach myself. I guess what was great about it was like its technical limitations. The parameters you worked in were – so there were parameters and you were limited, but that was really freeing creatively. It was very liberating not having to worry about all these dials and settings and stuff. And for me, for this – so, you know, for my daily work, I'm responsible to bring back an image that tells a story. I have to bring that back. For this, if I snap a photo and it doesn't work out, there's no love lost. I don't have that internal pressure. And I think there were a lot of happy accidents that was what kept me going. I mean, it's serious. I mean, I'm serious about it, but you kind of have to like let go sometimes and just let serendipity kind of smile upon you. If it works, it works. And if it doesn't, you move on. So the technical limitations were, you know, you can only take color or black and white. I have some black and white photos up, and I shot them black and white. There's no going; they weren't color that was changed to black and white. So, you shoot that, you're stuck with it, mm-hmm. you know. So that's nice. And you know, exposure wise, you can't get a really wide dynamic range, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just another tool, another paintbrush in the palette. So,
I've taken a look at the color photos as well as the black and white. And what's interesting about those color photos is the way the colors seem to be enhanced. You haven't Photoshopped them or anything, but
no.
They really do kind of jump out.
Yeah. So I guess it's my personal project, and I could Photoshop it to my heart's delight. But because I'm a photojournalist, I still take that. I don't overdo it. No, that's just what. I'll do a little dodging and burning, some, you know, within the parameters of most photojournalists' toning of images, but nothing heavy-handed or overtoning. It just happens. That's just how that camera captures those images, captures those colors or that black and white scene.
Is the photojournalist's eye different than the artist's eye when it comes to looking for and capturing a story?
I don't think the eye is different. I think the approach is different. No, I think we're all creative and we all have – I mean, I see a lot of great photography and, quote, documentary photography, which could be photojournalism done by people who aren't professional photojournalists. So I think it's about the process that you – and, you know, it's also about the ethics too. I mean, I got hired and I have standards that I have to abide by. And if I don't, you know, there's going to be repercussions. So,
well, I think, you know, and a great example, too, is the shot that you have called Air Force One. Yeah. I should have you describe that for us.
Oh, Air Force One. So that is actually – so a lot of my photos are from me going to and from assignments or on my own time. But a few here and there are from assignments I was at. And one was Air Force One, where you show up 3 or 4 hours before the president's
you
plane
as a
lands.
Journalist.
As a journalist,
yeah.
Yes. We have to go there for security purposes. And so in the distance, there's a stairway going up to nowhere and two guys on it. And there were Secret Service men measuring the height of the stairway to when Air Force One would land. And that's where the front door is. So it's just they're really small, a lot of space. But just to me, it's funny. It's one of those normal everyday things for them, but not something that we right. get to see all the time. And you know, I think a lot of the photos I have a kind of an inherent humor underneath as well. So,
well, it's a great story about security and how far we're coming. They're guarding the stairway, for goodness sake. The plane isn't there. There is nothing to guard. And so mm-hmm. it tells an amazing story. But again, that's not the one we want to see in the paper. We really do want to see the president on the plane right. waving. And so you can't put that one in the end.
Right, exactly. And that's another reason I'm attracted to this is it's 180 degrees from what I do for daily work. We have to provide photos that tell a story immediately. And these photos are a little more quiet. They have a little more ambiguity to them. And that's kind of what I'm drawn to. And it used to be those photos would run in the paper. I'm not saying they don't, but the frequency of those running, it's not as frequent anymore just because of space limitations yeah, and photo yeah. packages. So now it's like photos that tell a story immediately, boom, boom, yeah. boom. And so this is more of kind of a quiet – more quiet photos. They're not so in your face. And, you know, I leave a lot up to the imagination of the viewer. And I think that kind of empowers the viewer to, you know, make their own what's going on in this photo. Yeah. Let them decide, you know, and I think that's good. It kind of gives them ownership of the image.
Well, I know that Air Force One is one of your favorites. Are there others in the exhibit that people tend to talk about?
Yeah, there's one called Garland Jones Building, and it's just it's no longer in Raleigh. It was torn down for the new Justice Center, and it's just a shot of all the windows, and they're blue windows, and it's one of those people it's a love it or hate it kind of building. So I think people are gravitate towards it for the graphic content, but also for maybe the nostalgia content for people who grew up in Raleigh or knew it or liked it or liked that type of architecture. So that's one that a lot of people really respond to.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Sean. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
Sean Rocco, photojournalist for the NNO, an independent photographer. His exhibition, Cellular Obscura, is on display at the gallery space at the Ackland Art Museum store in Chapel Hill through April 7th. And you can find out more at seanrocco.com. Rocco is R-O-C-C-O. Sean is S-H-A-W-N. Coming up after a short break, the musicians of Invisible play a typewriter that no one has seen for years. You'll hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Do stay with us.